Welcome to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. This is your home for serious content amidst an unserious world. All right, Brian O'Leary here. Welcome back to the new and improved Brian D. O'Leary Show. I've got a couple more shows, I hope, coming out later this week. Interview shows. And what we've done here a little bit is we're changing things up. And all the programs from here on out here on this feed are the Brian D. O'Leary Show. So we had the O'Leary Review podcast. I will still separate those interview shows on the website at briandoleary.com for the interviews. But what we'll do is just everything is going to be rebranded the Brian D. O'Leary Show. It's feedback I've got. It's a little too confusing to have several podcasts, you know, more or less on the same feed. So here, that's what we're going to do here going forward for a while. I talk a lot about experiments, doing experiments. And so at least for the time being, this is an experiment. See how this works. So that being said, you know, football season started up. It kind of cut my teeth in the podcasting game as a sports podcaster. Sportlanders, the podcast, which you can probably find in the archives. Great show I did with my buddy Tim Stout and Coach Phil Johnson. Filled in admirably for a while. But kind of shifted gears. But I did want to talk, this being recording this on a Tuesday, last night was, which I didn't watch, but found it on my Twitter feed, which you could go at Brian D. O'Leary on Twitter. A lot of stuff on Aaron Rodgers and how he played, what, three plays in the Monday Night Football game, and now his season is over. And perhaps his career, who knows? I doubt it. I doubt his career. But there's several Jets fans out there, and the Jets end up winning the game. And if I can find it, there's a funny tweet I saw. Yeah, funny or sad, I don't know. But a bar, a Jets bar, I guess, was offering free drinks if the Jets lost. And apparently people really started drinking pretty heavily once Rodgers got hurt. But alas, the Jets win in overtime. And all the bar tabs were paid at a lot of drinking going on. Good for that bar. I don't know if I would ever made that move with my customers. But turned out worked decently well for them. I watched a good amount of the Jets. Well, I think all of it, actually. The Hard Knocks on HBO, the preseason drama show kind of in that follows one NFL team each season. It's been happening from pretty much every season. There's been a couple exceptions, but since I want to say the year 2000 or 2001, I think the Ravens might have been the first one right after they came off the Super Bowl, but be that as it may, the show was good, like always. And it was a little slow going, I thought, at the beginning, and I really didn't pick up. I think the last episode was actually probably the best one because it kind of tied together all the storylines, which is good, what you want, I think, in any documentary, particularly a sports one. And, you know, I don't particularly care too much about the Jets. I thought the Aaron Rodgers situation was interesting. But the show, you know, I didn't know what to think about it at the beginning, but I watch it just like I watch all the Hard Knocks, just whether it's good or not, which they generally are. And this one tied it up toward the end good. But again, the Jets season is off to a bad start. Now, getting to know some of these Jets players and coaches, I'm fairly agnostic to the Jets. I mean, I normally root for the Patriots because of many reasons. But I have other teams that I pull for here and there, and the Niners, the Raiders, you know, it depends. I've got a Browns hat, I think. I'm not that I really pull for the Browns, but you know, it kind of depends on the personnel they've got within their organization, who I like and don't like. And the Jets turned me from, I didn't care one way or another, frankly. I thought the Aaron Rodgers thing was interesting. But then after watching, you know, their coaches, some of their coaches I like, actually, but the head coach I really dislike. And having been a coach who may have used too many cuss words at one point, this guy, he was over the top. Robert Saleh, a former defensive coordinator, and the Niners, or maybe the Niners. He worked for the Seahawks under Pete Carroll, but either way, not a real impressive guy. He might know his defense, but as a leader of men, he didn't strike me as a championship ball coach, let's put it this way. And Nathaniel Hackett, who's offensive coordinator. Aaron Rodgers really likes him because he was his position coach in Green Bay for a little bit, season or two. He didn't strike me as all that impressive either. I mean, he knows his football. I know that. But he was a coach last year in Denver and got canned partway through the season, I want to say. And like, he just has no, I mean, he knows his football, like I said, knows the X's and O's, but I don't know. I've never been in an NFL locker room as a coach or a player, but it strikes me that you want to command the whole offense as your as the offensive coordinator. It sounds like people get along with him, more or less a good guy, but he doesn't really strike me as a coach that I want to get behind if I were a player. Now, Aaron Rodgers has a whole different perspective, I'd imagine, because he's his buddy, and his buddy helped him understand the game a little bit better and the X's and O's thing, I'm guessing. And he has a lot of input as the quarterback in what the offense is going to do. And rightfully so, just as a whole offense, I can't see it working out that well. Now the Jets have this young fellow who struggled the last couple seasons, Zach Wilson. He struck me in that Hard Knocks is a bit of willing to learn, but just not ready for prime time, maybe ever. Last night may have showed a little, maybe coming of age, if you will. Perhaps it has a lot to do with being mentored by Rodgers, even over this short period of time, but we shall see how that all turns out. But even though they won last night and they do have a good defense, the Jets, I don't see them like a Super Bowl team, but we should probably bookmark this part of the conversation here. And I don't see them getting through the AFC anyway. I don't even know if I see them getting through their division. Their defense might pull them through. Either way, I think the AFC is generally too tough to get through get into the Super Bowl. And in the Super Bowl, a lot of times anything goes, so I just don't see them getting out of the conference. A lot of Jets fans are still hopeful, I guess, but without Rodgers and putting a lot of eggs in that basket, it's probably unlikely these days. But shifting gears here, we'll stick with sports because, I'm a huge baseball fan, as most of you know out there, and I love the game, love the sport, love the history, love reading about it, love coaching it, like all the things about baseball, except for the last couple years, really, and particularly this year. I went from a fella who would watch baseball every day, rare was a day where I didn't see part or all of a ball game. To this year, I've watched the entirety of maybe one or two games, the entire season so far, and we're coming up the last few weeks of the season, and rarely do I keep up with what's going on, kind of have an idea of the pennant races, but not really, not that hardcore. I used to read the standings first thing every morning, check up on box scores if I hadn't seen them from the night before, and that's just not the case anymore. I say I keep up with the sport, but it's usually just clips of stupid things that have been happening in the game based on some of the new rules, some of the ways the new rules are affecting the game, and just becoming depressing to the degree that it's validating my initial thought that all these new rules were bad for the game, or if not bad for the game, too hastily implemented. Pitch clock, the average fan tends to like the pitch clock, fine. The way it's been implemented, the pace of the game tends to be better, but the automatic ball and strike thing when you're not, it's just implemented poorly, and some innings and games have been determined by just stupid calls that used to be under the umpire's discretion. And there wasn't an actual physical clock, but you were supposed to deliver the ball in a certain amount of time, but that was expected of the players growing up. And then when that wasn't enforced over the course of time, things slow down. But, they have these stats where they say, oh, the time of game is way down. It's like, well, okay. But not that far down compared to, say, even 10 years ago or 15 years ago. It's like it got really slowed down over the years. My real solution to this whole problem is cut down time in between innings. You can cut down like a minute in between innings and the games are going to go quicker. But as we're seeing with college football, they changed the rules to speed up the game on the field to allow for more commercial times and breaks and stuff like that that are a more natural flow for their commercials. But the game goes by fast and it's pretty, there tends to be not as much flow, especially there you got a running team. Maybe you got a lot of passing, the game still lasts a lot longer because there's going to be incompletions, guys going out of bounds. Actually, even they don't even stop the clock for going out of bounds, and they don't stop the clock for first downs there anymore until the last 2 minutes of each half. College football. But the point being is, like, why do you want to get in and get out of a ball game, whether it's Major League Baseball or college football? Just getting in and getting out, like, what are you doing? Why are we watching the game in the first place? The game has a natural pace to it. Granted, it was a little slow in baseball, but the fixing of it with the clock is a Band-Aid for sure. But the thing that bugs me the most is the lack of pickoff, like limiting pickoffs or stepping off the rubber. It just was a way to control the game, and it was used strategically, not necessarily tactically. And now you have to employ that as a tactic in the game, when you're going to do it or not. And there's certain teams that need to slow the game down. And you know, some people complain about the length of a lot of these Red Sox Yankee games and all the pitching changes, and that's a whole nother thing. And this was implemented last year, the year before, where the pitcher has to pitch three outs or through the end of an inning in order to get, or excuse me, to three batters or to the end of the inning to get replaced, which is, I mean, I get it, but why don't, there should be some roster limitations or something that would make that better. Like, it's just artificial. Like, I want one out. I want to bring a certain guy in, and you know, maybe I blow up my bullpen doing that, but whatever. I mean, but that's the way the game was played, and it's just a weird thing. Like, if a guy is can't find the plate and he goes eight balls in a row, you still have to keep him in. And I just that kind of thing bugs me. But getting back to the point about the game and the rules and the pace and all this stuff, and getting back to controlling base runner. Well, there was a thing I saw this morning, and it was posted by former major league player Jeff Fry, who had a pretty good career. He hit about 290 for his career over about 8 years in the big leagues off and on. Good player. And he's kind of, I think I'm on his side, or he's on my side with a lot of this stuff. And what happened in the game, the Blue Jays were playing, I think the Rangers. Blue Jays pitcher steps off the rubber, there's a runner on third. He chases after the runner because the third baseman had been play way in the hole. There's a left-handed batter up, so the shortstop was basically behind second or close to, not entirely behind, because you can't do that anymore. That's a no. And the third baseman would be playing where the normal, say, shortstop would be playing. So he's not holding the guy on as we would in baseball, where be close enough to the bag that you can make a throw over. So this guy on third base for the Rangers gets a giant lead. And the Blue Jay pitcher steps off the mound and starts running after him. But he'd already disengaged with the pitching plate twice. So the third time, if he doesn't get him out by chasing him back, before he chases him back to the bag, if he doesn't tag him out, it's a balk, and the runners all advance. Well, it scored a run. And you just see on the guy's face, like, well, I mean, the guy's halfway down the line, and you have a pitch clock that you have to deliver the ball in a certain amount of time. Granted, they, you know, within this deal, they could have shifted the third baseman over, but that's the strategy. That's one of the old strategies leaking over to the new strategy. And, you know, it just, in the big leagues anymore, I just don't know. But it's just like a weird game. And that whole thing really bugged me. And I even wrote back to Fry, I think. It's like, man, just like I said at the top here, the top of this segment, I used to watch a ton of baseball, and I don't anymore. And it kind of saddens me, but, you know, because I think this is temporary, but I don't know. I mean, a lot of things in this world I thought temporary. And frankly, one of the reasons I stopped podcasting specifically about sports is because I realized that a lot of the changes weren't temporary and they depress me. But occasionally I need to get these things off my chest. And I have. So let's take a break right here and just remember to head over to briandeolary.com. If you haven't already, you can sign up for our daily emails and get your podcasts sent directly to your inbox. And just go over there and click the link on the for the O'Leary letter, and you'll be able to sign up for that. Email most every day, and we're going to start podcasting a little more regularly. Anyway, what else do I got today? I got, well, I think I'm just going to leave it at baseball and football, and hopefully that things shape up a little more as far as the enjoyment of the sport. But I do have to say, sticking with the football theme for a few more moments, that I really have a hard time not watching the NFL, particularly at a Red Zone, on the Red Zone channel. And I tried taking a break. I did a couple hour break in the middle of the day, but I just got sucked into the games again. And I don't know what my life would have been like, say, as a child having a Red Zone channel. I don't know if I'd been a bigger football fan or just more sucked into the whole story. I think it's a great propaganda arm for the National Football League, which I hate, by the way. I hate the NFL proper, but I love the football. And same thing goes with college. I really dislike the NCAA, but I like college football for the most part. And what my man Deion Sanders is doing in Colorado, I really enjoy. People doubted him. I didn't really doubt him. I thought it was a tall task to turn that program around. And granted, it's not necessarily turned around. They've only played two games, won them both. But they got a squad there in Boulder. And it's a team that I will be pulling for the season. Deion Sanders was my favorite ball player, oh gosh, 30 years ago, call it. Yeah, for a year, I mean, I had the posters, I had the shoes, I had a Falcons fan, and then we moved to the Niners. I was a Niners fan, and we moved to the Cowboys. I kind of became a Cowboy fan for a little bit. Played with the Braves, who were my favorite National League team. Love that. Kind of liked to want to follow the Reds a little bit when he joined them. So, but that being said, he's doing a great job, and what a great coach. I don't know that he's necessarily the X's and O guy, but he is the CEO of the Colorado football team. And that's what you got to be in college. And, you know, even in the NFL, really, as a head coach, you got to be this kind of the CEO. And whether you're really good at X's and O's or not, you've really got to kind of leave that up to your assistants and you have final say. But you got a lot more going on as the head ball coach. And Deion right now is doing a great job of that because he got all the players. He got all these players to come with him. He has 10 returning scholarship players, I think, from last season, which is unheard of. And it wouldn't happen really in any other era other than this crazy era that we're in where you can get, you know, like get rid of a bunch of scholarship players and bring in new ones, transfer portal and whatever. So that being said, it's probably a unique time in history for this kind of overhaul of a roster to take place. And I don't really care. I like watching the games. I've been watching the Boston College games, which a bit of a struggle the first couple weeks. Got Florida State coming up, my alma mater, Boston College. And they've played at the same time as Colorado. So on another screen, I've got Colorado going. But the problem, and I know I've got a few Boston College fans that listen, we're not a huge fan base, so forgive me if I go into this for a few moments. But the problem we have in Chestnut Hill is that our coach, who is a really good defensive football coach, just on top of it, knows his stuff, X's and O's, Jeff Hafley, by all accounts, good guy, enthusiastic, knows a lot about the game of football, has had great mentors. The problem is, as I see it, especially right now, in his fourth season, two games in, lost the first one and had a nail-biter for the second one, is that he is a poor CEO of the program so far. He's hired some pretty bad assistants, maybe a couple of them good, but like he is the best football guy on staff, which can be good. I mean, yeah, Vince Lombardi, Tom Landry, Bill Belichick, yeah, those are all the vet, you know. Don Shula, maybe. Those are all the best football guys, and they're the head coach, but we're not there. We want a really genius offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, maybe that's Anyway, you know, it's me grousing as a fan a little bit. But the thing is, he hasn't hired the quality of assistance that he needs, and therefore the culture is also not quite what it needs to be. He sets a standard as a culture, but I don't believe, from all I've seen, that the assistant coaches are really bought in to what needs to take place in the culture. And compare that to what's going on in Colorado. Everybody's bought in. They're all bought in. It could be the worst offense or scheme in history. It's not, but it could be. And they buy in. They do the things. Coaches do the things. Players do the things. Same thing with defense. It could be like the techniques could be bad or not, but they're not. They could be, but you got buy-in, and culture goes a long way, especially in a football program. And at Boston College, the culture starts at the top with Halfley. I believe he has the right idea. He has not instilled it in the players. And part of the thing is the whole transfer portal thing. You don't have to get bought in. We just need players to field a team, a competitive team. And sometimes you want to take a marginal talent versus a guy or marginal talent that's totally bought in and dedicated to the program than a really good player that, you know, it's just there for wherever his next step's going to be. Maybe next year he's playing at a different school or tries to go pro or whatever. And that, you just can't have that around as the primary motivators. Of course, everybody wants to go pro. That's fine. As a primary motivation, that doesn't work for me. And I see that as part of the problem at BC. And Halfley, you know, he had a fiery press conference at the end of, after the game against Holy Cross this last Saturday. And he was angry. He's like, this is not going to happen. All the penalties, personal fouls. He's like, it's not going to happen. But when I'm watching that, I'm like, well, it did happen and you didn't do anything about it. And now you're saying you're going to do something about it. It might be too late. I hope not. I like the guy and I like where he's going, but he's got to turn it around immediately. And that goes for any other fan base out there who, you know, I mean, you just take Dion, for example. Like he's committed to this program. He might move on. He might move on to an SEC school, as they say, or the NFL. I don't really think so anytime soon, but maybe. But because he was at Jackson State for a couple of years, and he's going to be at Colorado. His son is probably the best quarterback in the nation right now. So he wants to stay there for a little bit anyway, I hope. But it's the buy-in. It's the culture. And I wish more coaches were like that. They're not. And the competitive nature of, and I don't even know if Colorado is like competitive talent wise with a lot of these other schools. Certainly they were against Texas Tech, who made the national championship game last year, and Nebraska, who's historically good, but have stunk for a while and they're in a rebuild. But still, like, Nebraska gets a lot of good players just for being Nebraska, more so than Colorado, even though Colorado was very good at one, two in history. Anyway, I just encourage, like, seek out good coaches in your fan base, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like, be able to criticize your coach for not going far enough as far as the buy-in to the program. I think a lot of them get too set in their ways almost. And Nick Saban lost, Alabama lost to Texas over the weekend. Texas is a good program and it's becoming better. I don't think that Saban can be too upset. Like, he runs the program. The players, he might just not have the horses this year like he has in the past. He's got a lot of good players, but, you know, the churn there at Alabama, a lot of guys go pro and your quarterback isn't performing as well as some of the past quarterbacks. Well, yet you got problems, I guess. And I don't know. It's just, I like Saban's system. I like Coach Prime's system. I like a lot of these guys. I like Belichick in New England, even though they say, oh, you can't win without Tom Brady. It's the system, that consistency that Belichick has set up that allowed Brady to thrive, especially early in his, I think. And anyway, that's a lot of football for me and a lot of sports for right now. So I hope everybody out there, even if you're not a sports fan, you can take some of these lessons that maybe I talk about or you can learn from sports. And I think that's the main thing with sports, especially these days. Like I said, I'm a little bummed out really in the way sports has kind of turned over the years, last few years anyway. But there's still, it's still a game with people and people interacting with others, competition. And we can learn a lot from that, whether you're in business, family, life, or sports themselves. I think sports is really probably one of the great, or athletic events just in general, is one of the great things where we can learn a lot about ourselves and our life and just translate or, you know, look at life through that lens, or how you can glean insights through the world of sports. And it's just not just watching the game. Not just watching the game and rooting for your team. There's a time and place for that. And if that's the type of sports fan you are, that's the type of sports fan you are. But it's learning the lessons from, like, a lot of these good coaches. Find out who the good coaches are. Find out who the good players. Find out what they do and how hard they work and what they do for work. I mean, that's just one of my things. And maybe just be the coach in me that you want to find out all these things. But anyway, I appreciate the time. Glad to be back. I will see you later this week, or hopefully you can hear me later this week. Go to briandiolary.com for all that. And, well, and follow me on Twitter, if you haven't already, at Brian D. O'Leary on Twitter, or kids are these days, X. Do that, because I'm talked about experiments at the top of the program, experimenting with these live streams on Twitter and maybe other formats to see how well that works. Like I said, set experiments. Anyway, that's briandiolary.com and at Brian D. O'Leary on Twitter, and we shall see you later, folks. Thank you very much for your time. Bye-bye.